things are going great for Blair St. Clair, the ingenue drag queen from season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race. She's moved in with her hunky boyfriend, and her album, Call My Life, is topping the charts.
But things weren't always so rosy for Blair. When she was a teenager, her parents asked her point blank, "Are you gay?" And when she responded truthfully, they weren't prepared for the answer.
Since then, everyone's kissed and made up, and now Blair has the unconditional love and support from her conservative Christian family. Today, Blair St. Clair joins us to talk about her roller coaster ride through musical theater and drag, Butterfly Gate on the Drag Race finale, and what all young people can do to bridge the divide with their family. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Before we begin, let's listen to Blair St. Clair's first debut single, Now or Never.
It's not like you knew me. I lived in the world on a screen. Got too good at painting the dream. But if you really knew me, the spark faded out in a flash. I'm here cause I'm getting it back. I'm gonna turn the tide. I'm gonna live my life the way I want, the way I want to.
Our guest today is one of the sweetest drag queens to come out of RuPaul's Drag Race. Her new album, Call My Life, just topped iTunes dance charts at number one and is also worldwide at number 24. Please welcome Blair St. Clair.
Oh, welcome. Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here.
You have a beautiful smile.
Thank you. Thank you.
And a beautiful spirit.
Well, you know what? I think you should go through life having a beautiful spirit. If you don't, then why live it? why even try?
Tell me how the name Blair St. Clair came to be, because that's a name you chose for yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, as most drag queens, you come up with a name. You know, mm-hmm. as most do. They have an alias. And I had a really interesting story with mine. My mom actually helped me come up with my drag persona and drag name as Blair St. Clair. Initially, I tried to pick my own, and that was Daphne Duval. Not many people know that
okay,
I had
a different name
besides Blair St. Clair.
Okay.
And I was kind of going with my real legal name is Drew. It starts with a D.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of Marilyn Monroe. I thought it was iconic in Hollywood with the double M. So I was like, okay, it could be a double D. And it could have a funny play on words of double D and Daphne Duval. Well, it didn't work because everyone thought I was saying Daffy Duck. You know, so like Daffy, or, and then it was like Daffy Laffy Taffy, and I was like, okay, this is not gonna work, this has got to go. I was like, I have career goals and aspirations, and I want to go places, and Daffy and Daphne is not gonna take me anywhere. So I went back to the drawing board, I thought of a new name, and I asked my mom, actually. So I asked her, I was like, Mom, I need a new drag name. And she's like, well, what exactly is a drag name? You know, like, she didn't really know, and I was trying to educate her and become more knowledgeable myself. And I told her I really liked the name Blair, which I kind of got from the TV show Gossip Girl, because Blair herself is kind of cute, witty, sweet, smart, fierce, sexy, all of those things, and it's short and little. And so we just kind of decided on Blair at the time, and Blair was what it was going to be. And funny enough, I was on the treadmill probably a week or two later, and I had like 3 missed calls from my mom. And so finally I call her back. I'm like, Mom, what is it? Like, I'm working out. Like, what's going on? And she told me, she's like, I just passed St. Clair Street downtown. And at this point in time, it was in Indianapolis. And so I was like, oh, okay, are you okay? Is something going on? And she's like, no. St. Clair, it rhymes with Blair. And I was shocked at the name. I was like, oh, okay, like, I like that. That's cool. That's cool. I like it.
Your mom is your drag mom, too.
No. Well, I mean, she is like my drag. Yeah, so technically, in drag terminology, yes, my mom is my drag mom.
So would you recommend to any drag queen that has the name Daphne to get rid of it?
I would say if it's working for you, keep working it. But it's most likely not going to work for you unless you want to work for Looney Tunes.
Okay.
Daphne Dumont. That's Mark's drag name.
So when you were a teenager, your parents cornered you and said, "How was school? How are you doing? Are you gay?"
Yes. It was... I didn't have a coming out story. I had kind of like a forcing out story, but just very like sweet and innocent, but also very nonchalant. My dad was asking me after school one day, you know, how are school? How are your grades? How are your friends? Do you like boys? And I was kind of gobsmacked because at that point in time, I wasn't sure that I knew I liked boys, but I wasn't sure that I was gay. I didn't really know for sure. And I think, you know, it's kind of as gay men, we have this, coming of age that we understand that there is either a label or there's not a label that defines us, and you know, we can choose to live our lives by, you know, whichever name we can choose for that. And at that point in time, I wasn't sure if I was, what exactly was going on, but I was shocked when my dad kind of asked me, you know, what was going on, both of my parents themselves.
And for a while you didn't talk to your mom. Mm-hmm. And tell me how you guys kind of, you know, because a lot of kids come from conservative Christian families who don't understand or embrace their gender or sexual identity. Mm-hmm. And how did you reconcile your relationship with your mom? And she became one of your strongest advocates.
She did, yes. She is probably my biggest rock today out of people that have been in my life for a long period of time. And after that coming out and kind of announcing to the world, yes, I like men, I am gay, I think, you know.
Very attractive men, by the way.
thank you. And I think, so at that point in time, I wasn't sure what was really going on. Because my mom and I definitely felt a lot of distance. We definitely felt like we weren't connected. We definitely felt like life was a little strange. Mm-hmm. Even though that's something I always have been, something that I am. Mm. Nothing changed besides a few words that were spoken into the air. So that's kind of, you know, weird to think of it that way. But I realized and recognized that my mom wasn't upset with me. She wasn't frustrated with me. She wasn't angry at me. But it took me a long time to spin my head around it. And what it was my mom was upset that her firstborn son, you know, her son, her child could and most likely would have a little bit more of a difficult life, more challenges, you know, different things to encounter just because of who I am. Mm. And she was a little upset with the world. She was frustrated. She was angry. She didn't really understand why her child might have some more trials, more tribulations than maybe other children.
But how did you patch things up with your mom?
That's interesting because I'm not exactly sure there is an answer there. I think we both just kind of recognized that we loved each other, and love is love. And there wasn't any kind of moment, there wasn't any kind of day, there wasn't any kind of thing that was said. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a moment of feeling. So, you know, when you're ready to just kind of like let someone back in, you just kind of do. And it's just, I think walls were kind of let down. And I don't think she was blocking them from me. I think it was from the world. And I think she kind of finally realized that.
I imagine that for a lot of people who are listening to this right now, they don't have the best relationships with their families. Mm-hmm. They're struggling, they're hurting. What I always tell people, you've had your entire life to get used to being trans or queer, bi, gay, lesbian. So cut your parents a little bit of slack.
Yeah.
Even though they may be Trump supporters, Republicans, hardcore Christian conservatives, doing all kinds of things that are harmful and hurtful to you. But at the same time, forgive them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know what not they do.
Sure. Yeah.
And you've had all this time and perspective to get used to being you, but they don't have as much that benefit.
Mm-hmm.
What can you say to young people out there who are hurting on what you learned from reconciling with your family on what might be helpful to do?
I think what I've learned and realized for my life today is that as a millennial and as someone who is young, I want immediate gratification at all times. But okay. I've learned that time heals all. And it is a process. Time will eventually be on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's kind of cliche, but just don't give up hope. Don't stop caring. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on what you're passionate about or what you think matters to you or what is special. If that is creating a closer bond with your parents, make effort. See that there is effort given back to you, and focus and celebrate on the positives. Because I know, myself included, I definitely get so hung up and so concentrated on the negative things in life. There are many, many negative things, and researchers say that there is a 5-to-1 ratio that we could have one positive thing or attribute or, you know, comment that could be given to us, and we focus on the 5 negative before we hear the 1 positive. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, kind of what I would say as a goal to everyone is just to kind of put out a few more positives and kind of really hold on to those positives too, because it will get better. It does get better. And if it doesn't, you know, there will be a time that you get better as a person. And time is really the only thing that can manage that.
The world got to know you, unfortunately, first, not before Drag Race introduced you, but through the tabloid press.
Yes.
Who shall not be named. Voldemort.
Oh, why not? They sure named me, so why not?
Listen, don't name them. Don't give them free publicity.
Exactly.
They basically put the fact that you were, I guess, in trouble for DUI, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And, that's true.
And created this illusion, I guess, that like Thelma and Louise, you were driving to LA with the police behind your tail, sirens flaring.
Right.
And you were trying to get on, save me, RuPaul, otherwise I'm going to the slammer.
Mm-hmm.
What really happened?
Well, there are two sides to every story, and, you know, mm-hmm. I can only tell mine. And I, in, so we filmed Drag Race in the early fall of 2017, and I got arrested for a DUI, which is true. That's factual. Mm-hmm. You can look it up, mm-hmm. and I will gladly talk about it.
You look really good in your arrest photo.
I actually had to get out of drag for that photo.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
I was, but mainly, I was not, like, wearing a wig or heels, mm-hmm. but I was wearing basically everything else.
Full face.
Yeah, full face.
So they made you wipe off your makeup to have your mug shot.
Peel nails off. That
oh
were
my god,
going.
How humiliating.
Yeah. It was very humiliating, but also humbling. You know, now that I can look back on it and learn from it. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, of course, I was angry and mad, and I was like, why should I have to do this? So that happened in early spring.
Sure.
Of 2017. And so I was arrested for DUI, and at this point in time, I recognized that I made a mistake. I broke the law. There are consequences for breaking the law. I was the first to admit that. And, you know, there are problems. And then I was going to do whatever I needed to do, you know, take care of whatever business I needed to take care of. And I was going to continue on with my life, you know, just let it not pass over it, but just accept it and move on.
Sure.
And little did I know that that would actually come back to what I thought then was haunt me. Because then, so I came back from Drag Race after filming. There were these mass media stories all over saying that I broke probation, I, you know, left and did all these things that I wasn't allowed to do, and made a
but
big...
But you didn't break... It was perfectly
I
fine with the police.
I took care of everything that I had to do beforehand with mm-hmm. filming, because that's why I was able to do RuPaul's Drag Race. They do an extensive background check mm-hmm. on you. You know, the show was very, very involved with the whole process beforehand.
I thought you got arrested for stealing people's hearts.
Oh!
That's my joke, but
I could probably still go back to jail mm-hmm. for that. No, that's actually mm-hmm. a terrible joke. But, because that's very serious. And so at this point in time, you know, like, I was going through so much, you know, I was coming back from the show, and, you know, as now viewers know, I was eliminated, you know, throughout the show. So, like, I came back, I saw these tabloids, I saw these things going on. I saw people that I trusted with information about, you know, what was going on in my personal life and my legal life, reposting the story. Not that they were advocating for the story, but reposting and saying, oh, this isn't true. But every time you repost, every time you retweet, every time you share, you're putting that image, you're putting that message back out into the world. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, guys, stop this. You know, you're adding and you're fueling the fire to this stuff that isn't true, mm-hmm. or you're fabricating it, what already is true. Because there are pieces that are.
And, but everybody loves a rebel.
And of course.
It certainly, like, made you the talk of the town mm-hmm. way before,
like,
the season
we
started.
We thought you were definitely a bad girl.
Right. Most people thought, you know, that like, oh, Blair St. Clair, that girl, she was so bad. And the truth be told, you know, I was taking an opportunity that was given to me that I had worked very hard for, and did everything in my possible being to take care of that issue. I had learned from that issue. I had struggled from that issue. I mean, financially, you know, with lawyers and legal fees, and internally and legally. And mm-hmm. so, like, I had already done a lot of my penance for that, and then I had to go do public penance as well, mm-hmm. with everyone knowing my business, with breaching my privacy, And, you know, then hearing the hate and the commentary mm-hmm. from everyone else. Mm-hmm. And no one's perfect in life. Mm-hmm. We all make mistakes. Right. That happened to be my legal mistake.
Because not only was it putting your legal troubles on blast, it was also putting you on blast for being on Drag Race. And when that mm-hmm. was, at that point in time, was a secret.
And yeah, you're not so legally allowed to comment on it at all.
Absolutely not.
Until now.
Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, I didn't feel comfortable talking about anything legally that happened to me. And I also didn't, you know, I disappeared for quite a few weeks on end, and I just reappeared, and all these things started talking mm-hmm. about me, so I didn't want to make a public statement and draw more attention to myself. And then I also couldn't say anything about Drag Race. So I, you know, I talked to producers, I talked to people on set, and I said, you know, what can I do? And they said, basically, I'm sorry, but you have to just stomach it. And when time developed and I could talk about it in the spring, I didn't want to. I didn't want to bring more negative mm-hmm. press back to myself. At that point in time, I had gotten through it, mm-hmm. gotten over it, it made me stronger, and I just wanted to move forward.
What do you say to people who set out to fight with you, to start conflicts, because they feel that empowers them? And mm-hmm. I think, you know, in the mindset of posting, you know, this unnecessary information about you on social media was really stemming from a place of that they're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? What kind of love letter can you write to these haters, to these fighters?
You know, today, looking back, and I would not have been able to say this mm-hmm. months ago, mm-hmm. but today, honestly, what I would tell those people is thank you for your hate. And I know that sounds very convoluted. I know that sounds crazy. And I don't advocate any sort of hate whatsoever because, you know, that just, what's the point? Mm-hmm. But, inevitably, I needed those negative comments, unfortunately, and my face being broadcast, you know, nationally, worldwide, actually, because it mm-hmm. was, the story was picked up, you know, all over the world. And, I had to sit with that and know that, you know, people, their first impression of me was going to be of having bad character. And that was really, really hard for me to mm-hmm. stomach because I was like, I think I myself as a good person. I try to act in the best way I can. You know, we all make mistakes as humans, but to put my right foot forward every day. And so that was the most hurtful thing. Mm. And so I would tell someone today, think before you post, because that one moment, that one comment could change someone's life.
Activism is not attacktivism.
That's so true. That's so true.
That's what Damon L. Jacobs said.
And I'm thankful for this, that I took the negative hate and the negative commentary and I turned it into something positive for my life. And I looked at that as a mass spread of hate and said, okay, cool. Like, you know, there's a lot going on. I was like, it's possible that I do have more of a problem of normal drinking because, you know, obviously, hello, like it's all over the world right now that, you know, I had problems with drinking in the past. So let me like look into this, you know, look, see if there is a problem. And you know, today I live a sober life because I have realized that that is a problem of mine that I needed to encounter. And I needed to look at the reasons and the things behind the alcohol that I was masking, that I was using that for. And so inevitably, I try to look at it as beautifully as possible and as optimistically as possible. And that, like, the hate turned me into getting my life together.
Now, in the music video for Now or Never, you sort of pay tribute, I don't know if you're aware of this, to I Love Lucy.
Yes.
With Vita Vegemin mm-hmm. bottle
yeah.
that you pull out and get drunk on.
Mm-hmm.
Was that conscious or?
Yeah, that was okay. conscious. There are, if you watch both of my videos, you know, For Now or Never and Call My Life, mm-hmm. they are both, have a lot of symbolism in them. And I ask a lot of my viewers and my audience and my fans, I ask, you know, hey, what did you notice? Did you see anything? Because they're actually very thought out. They're very meticulous. There's a lot of planning that I put into those and behind the vision board of saying, okay, I want this because I want this to represent this kind of person. Not necessarily just me, but I want it to represent this person, or alcohol wasn't necessarily just representing alcohol and dumping it out and saying, I'm done with this, but it was that alcohol can contain liquor. Literally or metaphorically, it can contain people's problems, their
vitamins,
problems, their worries.
Meat, vegetables, mineral, and 80% alcohol.
Yeah. Totally that.
But I mean, there's certainly like, you know, an inspiration from that iconic moment in Lucille Ball's comedy mm-hmm. career that you certainly relate to.
Yes, yes.
And you both have these, you know, you're both these cute, adorable, bright eyed, bushy tailed redheads. I mean, do you see yourself right now? I mean, you're obviously not a redhead, but
don't tell my secrets.
As a drag queen, like, how do you see yourself? Like, you know, besides of somebody in recovery,
And are you a happy-go-lucky girl? Are you a bad rebel? Are you a comedy queen? Are you a activist queen?
I see myself as an ingenue.
Okay.
So that...
An ingenue is just somebody who's new to the scene,
ingenue,
right?
Means, you know, someone that's kind of new, young, fresh-faced. And yeah. I think that kind of represents and embodies me because... they also have a journey. Usually mm-hmm. the ingenue is like the young female lead of the show who has some kind of journey throughout. You know, she either finds love or something happens. And so my whole life is my journey. Mm-hmm. You know, like I kind of come in really young and cheeky and just kind of here to have fun and enjoy life and to learn along the way. And I'm learning lessons each day. So I'm finding that journey. You know, I don't know exactly what the end of the story is going to be, but I'm going to come full circle and get there.
You filmed this on an airplane and it's about to crash.
Yeah.
What airline is this? To make sure I don't fly on it. Jinx Monsoon's when the stewardess is.
Oh my God!
We call this Blair Saint Air.
Yeah.
As Jinx so lovely noted, we thought it was, you know, really funny to kind of play homage to my name and also.
How much was that scripted? That scene between you and Jinx Monsoon?
That was completely improv. Completely.
Oh, fantastic.
They just put a camera on us. We kind of talked about it. And we actually, Jinx and I hadn't really worked much together before shooting the video, but our chemistry was insane. We just got along so well.
Well, she was cracking you up a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jinx is crazy and for all of the best reasons possible. She was so much fun to do that video with.
She wouldn't make a good airline stewardess, though, because she's drunk.
She would probably like shove people into the bathroom on the airplane and like just shut them up, you know, be like, she'd probably yell, the baby's crying.
But is that actual inside an airplane or are you guys on a film set that looks like the airplane?
It was an old airplane that was turned into a film set. So the answer is both.
Mm. But you were not like at an airport. You were actually in a studio somewhere.
We were in a, yes. Okay. Yes. Like
is
a
it
studio.
The studio that's always like an airport?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yes. So it's kind of both.
We've seen it like in different commercials and stuff like that. They have mm-hmm. a studio that's an airport, and then there's a plane that people get on.
Yeah.
Like it's just the studio that anytime people want to do something in an airport or a plane, that's the thing they use. It's out in LA, right?
Yeah. It's always there.
Yeah.
You're putting every penny you're making into these expensive music videos.
I'm putting a lot of it. That's for sure. Yeah.
And your boyfriend's like, Lucy, I don't know.
You're like, stop spending the milk money.
Well, I mean, because you and your boyfriend just moved in together mm-hmm. into a new home in D.C.
Yes, Washington, D.C.
And so talk about like the pressures that's putting on your relationship. It's like you're bringing all this money in. You guys are traveling all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I know for me and my husband, it's like, you know, whenever some of us earn money, it's like it is a tension on how that money will be spent.
Yes, yes.
And how do you guys negotiate that?
Well, we have a couple different things that work well for us. That the main piece being is that first and foremost, we look at Blair mm-hmm. as a separate entity from everything. And we look at my boyfriend.
So is your boyfriend like, may I speak to Blair now?
Oh, he knows when I flip. He's like, okay. I was like,
the monster.
She is here. She is ready. She's ready
RuPaul
to make money.
RuPaul describes herself as the monster.
Does she really?
Yes. She says the monster is out.
I never heard that.
She describes her drag alter ego as a monster.
Good for her.
But I don't think your drag alter ego is a beast. Maybe on this runway.
I wouldn't consider myself a beast in drag. I try to be a little bit lighter. I would say maybe out of drag, I'm a little bit more subdued.
You're kind of like a Disney character, right? In that sense.
Somewhat, sure.
You know, there's an enamel pin with your face on it.
Yeah.
How many enamel pins do you sell right now that have your face on it?
I sell two and then like a sticker. Yeah.
Collect them all, kids. It is like going to Disneyland when you go to DragCon. All the kids have all this stuff all over their jackets.
Yeah.
Now.
Pins, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't spent a whole lot of money investing in pins, more so than into music videos and into the music itself. So it's recouping.
And so I imagine that like the experience of like performing this music live in front of an audience versus like, you know, in a studio is very different for you. But you have this Broadway, you know, musical theater training. So this is no big deal for you.
It's different. It's very different mm-hmm. because training to sing on stage, which is something I'm used to, first and foremost, I've always been taught, believe it or not, to try and sing as masculine as possible. And that's not really me. I've been taught and pushed it for so long.
Can you give us an example of what your female voice sounds like then?
My female voice is just a little bit breathier. It's just a little bit lighter. Like, well, hello there, how are you? You
know, ooh, I'm getting so turned on now.
Is this a little bit softer? You know, is this the voice you're
looking like
for?
This, baby? You like this,
baby? Yeah, yeah. And so I've been...
Welcome to Blair St. Clair. It's $1.99 for the first 5 minutes. Your fantasies come true. What do you want to do?
And $10 for 7 minutes in heaven, if you're lucky. You know, it's...
Why are all drag queens such whores?
I think it's an easy thing to tap into. It's a funny, quick laugh. It's kind of cheap.
We're fluent in that language.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fluent in many different ways of speaking. Many.
How did you and your boyfriend come together? You have a can you show the ring, the promise ring?
Yeah, sure. I wear this promise ring actually at all times. I never take it off. He gave it to me at Christmas.
You're a good Christian girl.
I am a good committed girl. I'll say. And I
Are you Satanist right now? Or is it practicing?
No. I'm very
Mommy!
Spiritual. I'm very spiritual. But he. So Christmas time came around, and he told, you know, it was a very special gift of mine. Yeah. I wear anytime I'm in drag too. Like, just the one thing that actually does not come off my body.
Come off.
Never comes off. And you can see it.
Can
in,
I see it?
In photos. Yeah, you can see it in my photos. You can see it in. Music videos.
Wait, it's stuck.
You can't get it off anyway.
It's a beautiful ring. What is it made out of?
It's titanium? White gold.
Ooh,
white
gold.
Girl, nice. This is expensive, yeah. Honey. That's a Blair St. Clair.
I need to polish it up a little bit. She might have some makeup in there.
And he has the same ring.
Yes, yeah, one very, on very, his, very similar.
On mm-hmm. his penis. Just kidding.
That's for me to know. Me to know.
But so how did, I mean, you guys, it must have been a very emotional moment to give those rings to each other.
Yes, we.
Is that something you guys planned out, or were you surprised by it?
We had kind of talked about it, but it was solidified over Christmas. Mm-hmm. We had said, you know, that... When you know someone, you know someone. We're not ready to get married at this point in time, because especially... Things were going to get crazy in the spring, mm-hmm. as they sure did with the Drag Race journey. And we knew that marriage wasn't something that we could focus on realistically right at the moment. But we know that that's something that we are committed to. You know, at one point in time, we were committed to our monogamous relationship of being together for the rest of our lives. And it was just a symbol of that. It's a symbol that I wear every day that reminds me of that. And it reminds... I try to keep that piece. It's the one piece of me, that commitment, that love that I share with him in and out of drag. And it's the one piece that really stays.
And how did you guys meet?
You know, as I've mentioned very openly that I am sober, and we met both together, like in support and in recovery.
Since. You 13th stepped him.
No, definitely didn't do that. Because if you 13th step someone, you'll definitely
so that's lingo for people in recovery when you start dating somebody who's in the same recovery program as you.
It's very similar. Yes, okay. yes.
Yeah. But you know, obviously, like, you guys share similar struggles, and so birds of a feather flock together, and it's mm-hmm. certainly something, besides your sexual attraction to each other, it was something that really sort of laid a foundation for your relationship.
Yes, and I think what solidified it even more was our willingness to work together so well, and our friendship that really blossomed and mm-hmm. was groomed so well throughout the process of Drag Race. You know, you have so many, we try to look at each other as, you know, each of us separately, and our relationship as a separate entity as well. Mm-hmm. There's three entities that we really need to thrive to make us work. So sometimes if something is said, we try to say, like, if we can't take it personally, you know, or if something is said in the media, you know, about one of us or an attack or something, we try to let that not be a personal attack and be like, okay, someone tried to attack the relationship. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how we can further move past that or whatever, you know, or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And we try to keep our lives very private and very personal. Sure, we are seen with each other very often. We tag mm-hmm. each other in photos. We're a couple. I'm 23 years old, and I want to date my boyfriend.
Your boyfriend's sitting in inadvertently in the background of this video. Yeah. Wave hi! Honey, he's a good-looking man. So are you, too.
Thank you.
You know.
I'm very, very lucky.
I always say, when people talk about my husband, you know, being attractive, I said, honey, I do not fuck ugly.
I do declare I got the right one.
RuPaul came up with that.
He did. Declare. Yes. So the first time he ever announced my name, that is a weird phenomenon when you're mm-hmm. dreaming for so long to meet RuPaul. The RuPaul, you know, he's the queen bee of what you do.
You grew up watching this show.
Yes, I did. I am 23, and this show came out 10 years ago. I'm on the 10th season, so right when I was 13, 14 years old. And it was really interesting to meet him for the first time. But then not only did he say my name for the first time ever, but he also said, I do declare Blair St. Clair. And then he said it again.
Like foghorn leghorn.
And then, yeah. And it was like,
I said, son, daughter, I mean, girl, come over here. I do declare Blair St. Clair. Foghorn leghorn is based out of a Midwestern politician.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Everybody's Midwest.
Yeah. And you're from India. But so, I'm sorry, I'm just so excited to talk about this stuff with you. But so, your expectation to be on RuPaul's Drag Race, you have dreams, I'm sure, all your life, and to actually step into the new workroom, which was redesigned this season.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah, when I walked in for the first time, I forgot that it wasn't a room. You know, it's four walls with no ceiling because there's lights. It's a set.
Yeah.
And I walked into the workroom thinking it was a room, and I was shocked that it wasn't.
And so what was your reaction to that? I mean, because you start seeing all the contestants piling in. When they come in, that's the first time you ever get to see them. You
yes.
form an opinion about them.
Yes.
And they're telling you who they are by the way they enter.
Yes, they are. And they're giving you a descriptive detail
sure.
of who what legacy they might lead on the show. And it is true. If anyone's ever watching or interested or curious, you do not hear anyone. You do not know who is there. And you do not see anyone who is there until you walk into the workroom and then they follow or you follow them. And it's crazy because out of the thousands upon thousands of drag queens that may be in America, you have a maybe preconceived idea of who might be there. And I know I sure did. And I was the one person two people that I really knew, I thought for sure were going to be there, were Miss Cracker and Aquaria, and they both happened to be there. And I just knew because from knowing them on the internet.
And were you like, oh shit, I'm going to lose?
I walked in day one and I thought, oh shit, what did I sign up for? Because I can do this and I'm going to do this, but it's going to be
hard.
You're
quaking in your heels.
Yes. I knew it wasn't going to be easy, of course, you know, because that's definitely not the case, but I didn't. I'm a control freak. I like controlling situations, and I knew I couldn't control that situation. So that was frightening.
What was your... did you form opinions on the girls based on their entrances?
Interesting. I think someone... I definitely formed a bit of an opinion on the Vixen.
Okay.
I saw her walk in, you know, saying that she wanted to fight, and
about four or five times they're like, can we do that again?
Yeah. She definitely walked in, and I think her horns fell off or something. She had to come back in and redo that.
Oh, seriously?
That is serious.
Oh my god,
I think everyone walked in the workroom once. I think someone
she's trying to look
twice.
Tough though. She
was very tough. However, yeah. She was the first person I did talk to on set privately, and she is was the biggest sweetheart to me. So I will tell you, you know, first and foremost, she kind of pulled me under her wing, almost kind of like a mother hen. Was so very, very endearing.
When she left the reunion, why didn't you go out after her?
I was still trying to collect my check.
Why did the producers go after her?
I love how who was the one who was sitting there saying, like, none of us went out and got her. I'm like, well, you're still sitting
you're
there.
Still
get
sitting.
Up.
No, I will tell you off the, I guess on the record that, I did ask if we could follow, if we could do something. And then we took a mini break and I said, can we go talk to her? Can we convince her to come back? And, I was told that, you know, she had to be doing her own thing at the time. So,
she asked not to be,
I'm not sure. I don't really know, but, I did seek out asking, but in the moment, you know, I know I didn't follow. I didn't.
It does concern me because this ongoing sort of discussion on representation and great gratitude that's happened. It's a false binary on Drag Race, right? It's either you're on RuPaul's side or you're on the Vixen side. And I think we can support people and fight for equality and be grateful and at the same time have a frank discussion on representation.
I think one of the best parts about representation is not representing one side. I don't think you have to pick a side, pick a label, pick a name. I don't think you have to necessarily draw a boundary anywhere. I think you can say, this is what I believe, this is what I stand for, this is my opinion, and this is what follows. And I think there's a mix of what is right in that situation. And I think it's about just really sticking to your guns and following through and not being, you know, being a leader. I think it's important to be a leader.
Will you be performing in Black Girl Magic with the other girls?
I don't think this time around. I
imagine that, like, you know, all this conflict's unfolding before you, and I noticed that, you know, with Sterling, with Cameron or yourself, you guys were like, oh shit, I hope this, you know, when there are fights unfolding, sometimes the healthy or an understandable reaction is just to stay out of it. And I certainly, like, sense that from the two of you this season, that it was just, you know, and then maybe especially Cameron was kind of accused of being standoffish when, honey, that is your fight to have. I'm not, right. you know, I'm right. not getting involved.
Well, for me, I think when we were filming the show, so the episodes that people saw on TV that were filmed months before they actually aired, I tried to withdraw from any kind of conflict. I didn't want the conflict. I didn't want it to be a part of it. But over the course of the show progressing, being on television, and, you know, me going through my own life lessons that I've encountered throughout this process and journey, I've recognized that, you know, I have a voice and it is important to.
Sure.
It's not, you know, I am important. And what I have to say is important. And that doesn't mean that I need to attack someone for what they have to say. That doesn't mean I need to stand up for every instance I can pick my battles, which I have done before. But I am, if I have something to say, I am going to say it today.
Well, somebody think about the butterflies. Those were butchered. The butterflies that died needlessly. Asia O'Hara is a criminal.
No.
PETA. People for the desire for attention.
I didn't hear that.
PETA issued a statement saying, "How dare you, Asia O'Hara, for killing butterflies?"
Defend Asia. I know that she put so much research and effort into making sure that was supposed to be a nice spectacle, and, you know, she kept them in good temperature. She did everything she possibly could for it to happen.
Tits were too
but
hot.
They do say. You know, I will say this. They do say there are two things you don't work with in showbiz, and that are animals and children. And, you know, this is one of those instances that kind of proves that fact that you don't work with animals, and you can't really truly rehearse what's going to happen.
Right.
I guess insects do qualify as animals.
Of course they do.
Absolutely.
They do.
I mean, they're
not mammals. You know, yeah, it's like the animal kingdom.
Do we blame Sasha Velour for all this because she had such a spectacular reveal last
Absolutely.
Year?
How do you top that?
You know?
I mean, not just spectacular, but, like, iconic. And it was it's so, like, I want to live one day in Sasha Velour's mind because her mind, she is such an intellectual. And I respect that because every part, if you watch her perform, if you've ever seen her perform, it's incredible. Everything's thought out. Every movement, it has a purpose.
She actually hands out brochures beforehand with a bibliography of Foucault, Susan Sontag.
The footnotes, yeah.
Does so she you can really?
Read. I'm just joking.
I would put a past her, and I would respect that. I really would. You know, there's some other people I might be like, okay, girl, no, that's incredible.
I'm impressed. I was like, Foucault, Susan Sontag, John Berger.
Look at you.
Look it up, girl. Academic queen realness.
Yes.
Are you double jointed? By the way, people are asking me
double
to
jointed?
Ask you that.
I can do that. Is that double?
No,
jointed?
You were doing some crazy shit with your fingers bending them backwards.
Like this?
Yeah. Oh, that's, Jesus! Don't do that.
Is that weird?
That's kind of fucked up.
I can do this thing too. Like everyone did in elementary school. Like I think that's pretty normal. Like people.
Can you stick your foot in your mouth?
Yes, I can put my feet behind my neck too.
Oh wow!
Can you do that,
you
do that right now?
On here? Not in the short shorts.
No, I want to see.
It'll be a different kind of show because everything's about to rip apart.
What was the biggest surprise to you about being on Drag Race?
Oh gosh, the biggest surprise. Well, everything. Everything was absolutely a surprise. I think my relationship with the other girls.
Yeah,
because it's always evolving. Because on the show, you want to win something, and you're in a competition with drag queens. And so I like to say that RuPaul's Drag Race is the most similar to Survivor, because it's survival of the fittest of other men in dresses. And that is the most terrifying thing you could ever sign yourself up for, because if you want to subject yourself to that, I don't want to be you, and I certainly didn't want to be me at that point in time. And so walking into Drag Race, I thought I was going to be best friends with everybody. That wasn't the case, because everybody wanted the same goal that I wanted. And after Drag Race came out, we were all in this weird anticipation moment of, oh, this is going to come out. How am I going to look on camera? And it was weird. And, you know, my career could be on stake of how much I am on TV or how little I am on TV. And then you bond as well, too, like over each elimination week. So I gained friends. I went through the emotions of, like, gaining more friendships. It was that was really, that is not what I expected. I didn't think that I would be as close to some of the people on the show that I am.
Mm. Who did you get close to?
Ms. Cracker and I are very close.
She's lovely.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah. She is just as zany, wacky, and crazy as you see on TV in real life. Every day.
I believe
just
it.
Just less makeup.
We had her on the podcast before.
Yeah. Crazy
she
the cracker.
She has opinions. Mm-mm. She's got opinions.
She does. Mm-hmm. And I respect that. I respect people with opinions.
Absolutely. So she's your go-to good Judy.
She's my good Judy gal.
With.
Yeah.
Sorry to throw in all those terms. And so it must be wonderful now that the show's kind of wrapped up and done that you guys get to tour and spend quality time together.
It is. There is a little bit of that weird moment of everyone has their own career. Everyone has their own path. Everyone is doing their own thing right now in life. And it's a little awkward at times when you see other people doing other things. You kind of start comparing and you start wondering if you're up to their par or their level, or, you know, am I making as much money as them? Am I getting as much bookings? Am I doing as much with my career as I want to? And I have to remind myself, you know, it's just me. I have to focus on my career.
Right.
And that's why I'm really spending more time on not the RuPaul's Drag Race world life, but the Blair St. Clair career. Like, what is Blair doing? What does Blair want to do?
Well, it's certainly, you know, it's like, and Mark, you can speak to this, would be on a reality TV show with other contestants. It's like, you know, once the show's done, it's the real race starts.
I've said that so many times, especially with RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
I thought the race was on television, but the race actually started the day we got home from filming. Because, you know, now Blair is a business, and I have to look at it subjectively, and also I have to look at it as a whole and as a group. And, you know, it makes me money, it pays my bills, I have my own store, you know, I have my own schedule into it. Like, there's so much that goes into it. And I do a lot for myself, too. I do all my own hair. I do, you know, of course, my own makeup. And I do, like, a lot of costuming. And I work with people. And I have to remember that's my own vision at the end of the day. Mm.
There was a rumor that was spread on the internet. And the reason I'm asking is because, you know, certainly, like, the Trump administration has been very damaging to LGBT people this year. And certainly putting our democracy up for sale. One of the drag queens had confessed that she had voted for Trump.
Who?
I don't know. And so someone, they rumored that they boiled it down to you or Eureka, and Eureka said that she hadn't.
No, I hadn't.
And then
I voted in Indiana, like that's where I was registered to vote.
And it's okay if you
tell you that I didn't
have
vote for
voted
Trump.
For Trump. I think what we need to start talking about is the consequence of having Trump as president. And how do we get out of the situation that we're in?
Right, right. I do know quite a few people that did vote for Trump that are now a little remorseful.
What can we say to them? What can we talk to
Well, first and foremost, we can't place blame. Because what's done is done.
Yeah.
What's there is there, and what's happened is happened. But what we can do is we can plan for the future for the same things not to happen. So you can tell people, like, get your shit together, figure out what's going on, and think about, you know, not just you, because you're not the only person who lives in this world. You know, I hate to tell you this, but, like, you're not the only person in the world, you know, surrounded by. Neither are you and neither am I. And we have to remember that this world works by, it revolves around everybody, and it revolves around love inevitably. So if we're, you know, just being hateful all the time, we're not going to get anywhere.
And so, you know, some people say it's like a lot of these Trump supporters they're not living in the world of facts and knowledge and reason. And, you know, Trump changes what he says on an hourly basis. And they're not even, you know, Trump contradicts himself every second of the day. And so it's really hard to have a conversation with this cult because of the fact that they're just not here, and they're not even worth saving. They're in the minority, and we need to just encourage people to vote this election because our lives depend on it.
I think what's also important too is if you want a minority to win, you can't convince the mass majority that the minority is angry.
We're not the minority, though.
No. I agree. Yeah. I agree with you.
The majority of Americans support you know, the Democratic Party's platform of socialized medicine, access to education, blanking out here, you know, decriminalizing marijuana, and you know, keep getting kids out of cages.
Sure. I agree. But I do think as well, like,
and LGBT rights.
LGBT, yeah.
Abortion.
And that's it's very important just to stand your firm ground. on that.
And how do you talk to your family about these? Because you're traveling around the world, you're meeting all kinds of people, your heart and your mind is definitely growing. How can you convey this information back into your, and for us, how can we speak to our families who don't understand this stuff? Because I'm certainly struggling with this myself. You know, I have family members who are Puerto Rican, and they moved to Texas, and all of a sudden they're Trump supporters. And I'm just like, and at a certain point, I'm, you know, I know that their madness is stemming from the fact that they're isolated, they're lonely, they're scared, and they just don't know what to do.
Well, I think what some people do as well, that I'm not discrediting, I'm not crediting what Trump does by any means. I will first say that first and foremost, but I don't think it's, what's good is some people are expelling all their hate into one person and one man that, you know, Trump...
It's a party. It's a system. It's Fox News.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not one person. He is who happens to be the face of it.
Sure.
But, like, there is a whole, you know, entity of people that are, you know, full of hate and rage and that don't like that we exist and that we're doing this right now. And that is the problem. The problem isn't just the one person. Now, the one person should be, you know, to hold accountable for. And that's what we should, you know, go after. I agree. But, like, I think what's important, and, you know, as you asked, you know, to tell back to parents and everything, is to, you know, and a lot of people say educate your parents and tell them what's going on. I'm sorry, but my parents are already educated. My parents have their full realized ideas, but my parents are open to hearing something from me if it comes from my heart. They're open to knowing more about my life. They're not going to want to be educated, but they do want to have an open conversation with me. And that open conversation is important to me. I'm not going to shy away from that because they're my parents. I'm not going to tell them, you know, luckily my parents specifically, you know, they love, support me, and they understand. They've gone through that journey with me. My parents are very conservative people that have become very liberal throughout my journey, and they've seen, you know, my growth as a human being, and they've understood that what I've done and what society has done and what the government, you know, has around me, everything that I am and that I represent is not anything against their beliefs or their goodwill. And so they've allowed themselves to open
gift.
Up.
I mean, you being sort of sexual and gender nonconforming has been a gift to them.
It has, from the universe, from God. And I will say TV too, I'm beyond thankful to every day, has helped open my parents' eyes even more, seeing what I do, you know, what I stand for, what I believe in. And, you know, not everyone can be on TV. Not everyone can do that. Not everyone can sit down and have the conversation with their parents. But what I do urge people to do is to continue to be vocal and be open, but you have to remain open to that, you know, counter criticism, that counter argument. Because if you're just too closed off to it, which I'm not saying that people are, but I'm saying that some are, you know, you have to keep that openness to have that open conversation. And I think that's important too. I think a lot of people just stand and they attack and they have this firm wall up, but they're not willing to receive anything. Now, I'm not saying you have to agree with anything, and I'm not saying that anything has to be heard and accepted, but you still have to kind of have that conversation.
What's the biggest sacrifice you feel like you've had to make so far with you and your boyfriend? You were telling me that it's really hard for you guys to go out for dinner.
that's my choice. That's my choice, because there are many late nights, so we are ordering in, you know, at 2 in the morning. Something that I've given up, I think, is
being on Grindr and Scruff.
No, that's a blessing. That's a blessing. I will tell you right now. I think that the way I'd have to look at it is that I haven't given up anything. If anything, I've gained more with him. I mean, sure, there are moments they're like, okay.
I'm talking about just all the changes that have happened, relationship.
I think
because you're dealing with meet and greets, and I imagine
you're kind of
in a customer service job again, right?
That's
a hairstylist before, and when somebody didn't like your haircut, you're sort of like slowly talking them off the anger ledge.
Right.
And I imagine that when you meet some fans, they're putting on you a lot of their anger and frustration in their lives, wanting to pick a fight with you.
Yeah, I think the main term I use often is that a lot of people are trying to provoke me. They're trying to gain that that level of interaction where if they can receive a reaction from me, It's because they are trying to provoke to begin with. And so, you know, a big change in my relationship has been, we don't let anything affect our relationship, any words, you know, but we hear each other. We communicate what's said, what's brought into this relationship, but we don't allow other people to bring things into our relationship because it is ours. And that's been a change of our mindset of how to look at that.
Mm. I've been in situations when I've observed meet and greets with drag queens. The drag queen that the fans came out to see is standing right there. Mm-hmm. But the fan is like, I've been waiting for 2 hours for this thing, and I didn't get the poster that was signed, and I was promised this, that. And I'm like, but the person you're here to meet is standing right there, mm-hmm. and you're not living in the present.
Well, there becomes this place of entitlement.
Sure.
And, you know, I do what I do because I love to do it, and I do it for the people that come to support me. And, you know, like, I'll be honest, like, I won't have a job unless those people are there to support me.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very thankful for that, first and foremost. Mm. But no one is entitled to anything. I'm not entitled to anything. I'm not entitled to necessarily breathe. But so that is frustrating to me when there are some people that think that they deserve something because it's promised to them. Now, if you signed up and you paid the money, I will make sure it happens. I promise you, I will fulfill the job and the duty. However, you know, there's also a different attitude to have about that too. It's never, oh, I deserve this and I should have this just because. Well, no, that's not how life works. I'm sorry if you're learning this lesson for the first time. Mm. Life doesn't happen because it doesn't revolve around you. Now, we can work together, and I will be glad to give you that meet and greet. I will be glad to sign that poster for you because that's why you're there. But no one, me included, is entitled to anything.
I work in customer service, and I feel in some ways like it's really given me a huge benefit to be able to deal with a difficult audience member or fan or anything. One thing I was just want to throw out there into the universe for the people who are listening to this and to you is like when a angry fan comes at you, sometimes just letting them talk and, you know, giving them the opportunity to be heard and understood, especially if you don't agree with them, can be miraculous almost in diffusing that situation.
Right.
And so just that alignment with their frustration. I know you've been waiting here for so long, and I really just, you know, want to be so grateful to you for driving 6 hours in, you know, with their headlights broken in the middle of the night to come see me and
this weird thing that I have been told that there's a name for it, and it's called Sonder. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that everyone has their own life. So if you walk into a restaurant, every single person in that restaurant has their own life that they live. We don't know anything about their lives. So someone could come to a show that I'm in that has driven, like you said, 6 hours. Someone could have just decided they were going to come last minute, and they jumped into the meet and greet line. They saw something. Like, I don't know how other people live their lives, as other people don't know how I live my life or each other live their life. The best way people see that I live my life is based on media, or unless they meet me in person. So everyone has their own routine, their own life, their own thing that they're going through and they're going on. And it's a little unfair for some people to just expect that expectation that people know what's going on. But it is also important for me in return to always just be open. You know, like you said, it's just to hear, okay, I'm going to take that moment to hear that angry fan. I don't have to agree with you. And today in my life, I don't have to put up with bullshit. I don't have to take that onto my life.
So you go, security.
I can hear it. And I can say, okay, thank you. I'm glad you have that opinion about me.
Thank you for coming up next.
Blair, what was it like, the process of making your album?
Oh my goodness. So that was a process. I will tell you that. So we sat down, and for me, music has been a venue for me to just kind of express myself, as, you know, a cliche as that might sound, it's just been, every track on the album has been written specifically as a piece of my life, as a piece of my growth, as a piece of me. And we dissected each song and said, okay, let's talk about different points of this past year, especially different points that make Blair St. Clair, that make Drew, that make this whole entity that I am me. And I want to share that. I want to share a little bit of my voice. And we came up with song titles that match that. We came up with lyrics that match that. We came up with melodies that kind of understood that vibe. And that all came from Now or Never. You know, we're releasing that single on my Elimination episode. And that was just for me, really. We wrote that song. I have a songwriter who helped me co-write everything. And we wrote that as a means of release. And the whole idea behind that song is everyone has things in their life they're either unproud of, they're not proud of, they are going through, whatever that is everyone's own personal life thing, life entity. Mm-hmm. And it's about taking charge of that now or never. And that was for me. It was like, okay, I've had a lot of going on in my life, specifically discussed on the show, a lot of trauma.
Sure.
And it's my job that I've taken over these course of the past few months that I've had before it aired on television to make a better life and experience for myself. And it's now or never is the time to do that. So that was the idea behind that single, was for me. And it just so happened to be received so well. Everyone is able to relate so well. And that's what stemmed us writing the album.
Mm-hmm. You heard the rumors that Britney Spears didn't show up to this studio for her collaboration with will.i.am. She just recorded onto like a phone voicemail. Uh-uh. It's Britney, bitch. And that was how they sampled that into da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. You know that song?
Really?
Yeah.
Dang.
I mean, I don't want to put any ideas in your head, but
No.
That'd be kind of funny.
Every artist has something that works for themselves.
Call your songwriter, be like, it's Blair St. Clair, bitch. Okay, make a song out of that. Bye.
I'm not so sure I'd like the song. I don't know if I'm going to sing it. I'm not going to pay for it.
It's a real pleasure spending some time with you here today. You know, personally, like, I've enjoyed looking at all your looks, and your makeup has inspired me as a drag queen. And, you know, I'm using, like, paint my numbers by looking at your face. It's
Paint by Blair.
Paint by Blair. If you girls, if you want to know.
The pink here, the glitter there.
All you need is a little pink, a little shimmer, and a little lash, and you're good to go. Gloss on the lips.
I do love the simplicity of what you're doing, but at the same time, how your makeup is very good at sort of, for my, you know, horrifyingly masculine face, distracting from that, you know, the aggressive rouge that you're using. It's a great technique.
Thank you for putting that out.
That's
always evolving, you know, like my career, like my personality, like who I am. And I think I was actually a little frustrated. I asked Miss Fame, of all people, I said, you know, is it frustrating looking back at those pictures when you started doing drag, or started, you know, day one on Drag Race or whatever, and you've seen your makeup evolve? And she said, no, that's the beauty in it.
Mm.
And I said, oh, okay, because today I lack perception, and like I lack, you know, like how I am able to look at things. And
she gave you a paper bag and said, put this on.
She was like, you might not be Fame, and I'm not Fame by any means, but I was able to kind of look at my makeup a little bit differently, not be so upset by seeing some of the old things.
Well, it is great to watch a lot of these girls, because, you know, they have so much talent, and they go on Drag Race and they look good, mm-hmm. but then they learn so much there, and they learn so much afterwards, because they're constant. Now they have a full-time career, so it's every night putting on the makeup, and mm-hmm. you know, practice makes perfect.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've never been around queens from all of the, mm-hmm. over the country before until mm-hmm. Drag Race, and then, you know, learning from the best of the best in the business who've been in it for the longest amount of time.
Yeah.
So that's what really did teach me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of food do you enjoy eating?
Everything.
What's your, like, you know, go-to comfort food?
Chinese food. Carry out Chinese food at 3 in the morning.
After every show. Lots of duck sauce on it.
Everything. If it's an egg roll, if it is a dumpling, if it is, you know, everything. Everything.
Well, we have to stir fry with you sometime.
There's actually a funny story about...
Are you ready to stir fry for your life?
Oh, I can stir fry for my life. And I used to, like, take food home with me from set of Drag Race back to my hotel room. Everyone would, like, laugh at me. They'd be like, what is that skinny little bitch doing with all the food filled in her backpack, going back to her hotel room? And I would eat everything that night. I would just, like, take a bunch of snacks with me, take a bunch of drinks with me. I'd go back to my hotel room at the end of the night, and I'd...
Because you're forced to be there by yourself.
You don't have anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just...
I'm pounding the headphone mixer because the sound cuts off
in
the middle. Sorry, folks. This is a reminder that Feast of Fun is made possible because of your generous financial support. Come put a tip in our tip jar. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a donation to our show.
Come on, promotion.
Yeah. And the best way to support the podcast is to become a member. And you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to fabulous people like Blair St. Clair if it weren't for you.
We have 14 years of in-depth interviews with lots of RuPaul's Drag Race girls, lots of the judges, and RuPaul herself.
Oh.
And the very start of Drag Race, hoping the show I can be as good as the show is. that's a quote from Showgirls. But yeah, RuPaul actually was very had a lot of doubts.
Really?
In the early first year of Drag Race that it would catch on. And it was a very hard sell to Logo. At the time, Logo had flatly refused many times to do any content about drag queens. Mm-hmm. And they felt that there was not much future when it came to drag.
Boy, were they wrong. But then they were right.
Yeah.
And then MTV, or VH1, snatched it away from
them. Thank you! I'll take that.
Thanks for the hard work. I'll take that credit.
It is one of their top shows.
Yeah, actually, I think
Viacom is being like, please don't go anywhere.
Drag Race was actually rated the first week that our season premiered was the most watched television show in the country at that point in time. And I was like, wow.
Really?
Yeah. It was just like a one time.
It was next to sporting events. It was one of the top rated premieres.
On
television.
VH1 or on
television?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cable and broadcast.
When I heard that, I was like, wow.
Dust off that wig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I, too, dream of being on Drag Race Audience.
Well, Blair, let's leave the audience with one of your songs from your new album.
Wait, before you do that.
What?
You have a dream. You have you want to throw a dream out into the universe. You want to meet Demi Lovato.
I do. Demi is such a huge inspiration to me. We talk about, you know, like power divas that are really, really climbing and rising kind of right now in society, especially, you know, in her youth. And I just think she is so incredible. She has so much to say. She is such a powerhouse, not only in her voice, but also in her demeanor and everything she stands for and her morals. And I just absolutely am enthralled with Demi Lovato.
What do you want to do with Demi Lovato? Go out for tea and crumpets?
Girl, we can go out for tea and crumpets. She can call me. We can sing together. We can kiki. She can come to one of my shows. I'll go to her concert. I'll go on tour with her. Demi, if you're watching, I'll do whatever you want to do.
I'll post this clip on Twitter and I'll tag her with it. And hopefully, you know, hopefully somebody, we can make this happen. Mm. Let's make this dream come true.
Let's make it happen.
Blair St. Clair, I love you so much. You're so sweet and kind and so generous. I really appreciate your spirit that you brought to season 10 of Drag Race.
Thank you.
Over 100 drag queens now, right?
Yeah, I think we are at 140.
Shit.
140.
At this rate, everyone's going to be on Drag Race soon enough, so don't give up.
You should never stop trying. Seriously. Yeah. I mean, it's someone's time now or never.
Yeah, it's now or never.
It's now or never.
Available on iTunes
today.
You're gonna leave us with a song from the. Actually, this is the title song.
Yes.
From the album.
This is the title song from the album called "Call My Life,"
and
it's about my entire journey about into my life. The whole album is describing and everything about me and my personal and spiritual growth. And I'm excited to share a little bit of that with the world.
$4.99 the first minute, $1.99 each additional minute. It's really great to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on
the
show.
Thank you guys.
And hopefully someday we can cook together.
Absolutely. I'll eat everything.
Really?
Yum, yum.
Anything?
Well, you have to pay me for anything.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Blair.
Bye.
Bye.
You'll never really know, I know. And you're never gonna see every part of me. But I make you believe that I can make you mine. But I'm sick of this game. It's only me, disconnected. Take a screenshot with my mind inside. I've been craving something real, and it's all here. When I seek, I lose, I find, I hide. And you're never gonna see.